Turn to the 28th chapter of the book of Acts for a brief reading in just a moment. The best way to go home is to leave home. G.K. Chesterton was once asked as he got on a train departing London where he was going. He said, "I'm going to London," which startled his questioner. But what he intended to say was that if you want a perspective on where you live and the people you live with, you need to get away and then to look back. And of course, we've had that opportunity the last 2 weeks, but it's been more than that. It's been a rich time of fellowship with those whom we love in the Lord and have come to love profoundly. This reading from Acts 28 by the pen of Luke, beginning with verse 11, concluding in verse 15. "And after 3 months we set sail in a ship of Alexandria, which had wintered in the island, whose sign was the twin brothers. And touching at Syracuse, we tarried there 3 days. And from thence we made a circuit and arrived at Regium. And after 1 day a south wind sprang up, and on the second day we came to Puteoli, where we found brethren, and were entreated to tarry with them 7 days. And so we came to Rome. And from thence the brethren, when they heard of us, came to meet us as far as the market of Appius and the three taverns, whom when Paul saw, he thanked God and took courage." And those last words best express the experience that we had in the last 2 weeks in the country of Italy. "When we saw them, we thanked God and took courage." Most of you, I think, know that our recent journey to Italy was at the instigation of Larry and Linda Pate. There's no way I would have initiated this journey had it not been for his encouragement that we should go. And I think it needs to be said that the kind of preparation that he made bore some remarkable fruit. I was glad to be there and to observe it. Preachers had been to Italy before from the United States. Even elders had been to Italy from the United States. But never before in all the experience of the Italian brethren had any elder ever come to Italy from the United States speaking Italian. That was a new experience. And I can tell you, it charmed and gratified them beyond their ability to express it. When speaking in the assembly of the Church of Pomezia, which is just south of Rome, Larry had concluded his 15-minute address in Italian. One older brother who's about my age and who is a recent convert, Brother Bonifacio, could not restrain himself further, but said suddenly in the assembly, "Bravo!" and gave one clap of his hands before he could stop. To which Roberto Tondelli, who is the preacher in the congregation, said, "Now, brethren, you have observed that we had clapping in the Lord's Church in Pomezia. I don't think it had happened before." But this brother was simply overcome, not just by the words, which were moving, but by the fact that somebody took the time and the interest and the energy to prepare to speak to them in their language. I can tell you that I spent most of my time saying, "Io non capisco," I don't understand. And there is no greater frustration than standing before some beloved brother or sister, and they're standing looking at you, and you want with all the desperation of your being to communicate how you feel, and neither one of you can say a word that the other will understand. I resolved as a consequence of this trip that I would never go to Italy again, understanding as little Italian as I did this time. And it's not Larry's fault, because he made available every kind of advantage that he could, but I think it can be safely said that it takes longer to teach old dogs new tricks. But it was a rich and happy time we spent in Italy. What can I say about the country? The city of Rome and the country of Italy, it seemed to me, is a lot like the ancient ruins that dot the countryside all over Italy. It is a reflection of a former glory long departed. Rome was once the center of the world, and today Italy is just one of its lesser nations. Italian society is like Roman traffic, a sort of controlled chaos that somehow marvelously works. You have no idea what it's like for 5 lanes of traffic to go down 3 lanes of road. And to do that without traffic lights. And to move in all kinds of configurations, corners, exchanges. And I don't know how it happens. But I suspect in many ways that's the way the government in Italy works, we were about to decide. It is a case of controlled chaos. We don't understand how it works either. They don't know how it works. And sometimes you think it's not going to work. We suffered the experience of one strike after another, which is a part of daily life in Italy. You go to the bank workers are on strike. You go to the post office workers are on strike. You go somewhere else, deal in some particular business, and the computer workers are on strike, and the computer is down. We escaped Italy only by the merest margin, because the traffic controllers were going on strike at 12 o'clock, and I think we flew out of that airport in Fiumicino at 12:05. Barely got out of the country. Interesting. We experienced it momentarily. They experience it on a regular basis. Italy is a country that was once ruled by the Caesars, who also ruled the world. And now it's a country which is dominated by the Vatican and by the papacy. Although concordats have been worked out between the Catholic Church and the Italian government that is supposed to make some sort of separation exist between these two, I can tell you from the experience of brothers and sisters in Christ in that country, that is just a figment of the imagination. Roman Catholicism controls that country. Up until recent years, they paid every priest his salary. Now they take 8 lire of every 1,000 lire collected from the Italian people, and I can tell you that's a lot. Taxation is heavy, heavier than any American citizen would probably ever endure. But a large part of that tax money is taken into the coffers of the Roman Catholic Church, and its influence is pervasive. In the schools, its doctrinal positions are taught by teachers that are paid by the state to teach the dogmas of the Catholic Church. Children of Christians may be excused from such classes where they're allowed to sit somewhere else in the school while this is going on. But that's a part of the curriculum of the school system. Dominates the society. The reason that Italy is important to us, and the reason it was strange speaking in Rome about Roman soldiers and speaking in Rome about the Roman Empire and how it persecuted and oppressed ancient Christians. But Paul wrote 5 of his epistles from this city. And when he wrote to the church at Rome, talked about more people that he knew there than any other epistle that he wrote, which seemed to tell us that people from all over the empire that he had come to know and love and appreciate had wound up in that city, because when he wrote that epistle, he had never been there, but he wanted to go and mentioned that often. He said he must go to Rome. And at last he did in a way that he had not anticipated. But as he came, a prisoner, chained to a soldier, and landed at what is now modern Pozzuoli on the coast of Italy, some 40 miles south of Rome, we are told that he met brethren already there, in that city, meeting to worship, 60 A.D. And not only so, the word must have gone by that network of strange happenings by which brethren in those days could get word to other people. The word must have gone quickly to Rome and to the brethren there that Paul had arrived, because they met him halfway to Rome at Appii Forum. And as Luke said, and he was present, he said that when Paul saw, he thanked God and took courage. There were problems in the Roman church, or churches. We're not quite sure whether or not that was just one assembly or more than one. That's evidence from the fact in the 16th chapter of Romans, Paul said, "You take note of those brethren that cause occasion of stumbling contrary to the doctrine." It seems to me it's evident, too, in Philippians 1:15, when writing from Rome, he says that there are some here who preach the gospel of envy and strife. But he said, I don't care about that as long as the gospel gets preached. But that tells you that there were difficulties. I don't know if you know, and I didn't know, how all this began in Italy in modern times. But the gospel was first preached in modern times in Italy, so far as we know. God knows everything. We're just talking about our limited knowledge of things when people went there and said, let's just be simple Christians. In a society that was totally dominated by Catholicism, 1949. The consequence of it was that they ran into stiff opposition from the state and from the Catholic Church because it was not legal for anybody to meet or put up a sign other than Roman Catholicism. And their immense cathedrals are everywhere. Huge, overawing manifestation of medieval architecture that just simply dominates the landscape in Rome and dominates the landscape in every single Italian city. What you can see from a distance as you move across the country is that tall spire, or several. To look over Rome is to look at several spires, several huge domes that are everywhere. And when they got there, it was an intimidation of the Italian state and of the Roman Catholic Church that this small group of people should establish one tiny congregation in the midst of Rome and put up a temporary sign that said, Chiesa di Cristo meets here. And they tore the sign down. And the news got into the media, and it finally got around the world in the United States Congress. But it shows you that Catholicism, when it manifests itself with freedom, is a totalitarian, rigid, control-minded, absolutist kind of approach to things. In talking to Roberto Tondelli about some experiences I was having here, of people who were flirting with Catholicism, he said, how can they do that? Don't they know what it's about? I would advise those who have any doubt about the direction and quality of the teaching, practices, mentality of this system, you ought to visit Rome. When Luther did it, he called it the brothel of hell in the early part of the 16th century. I would not say that Rome today religiously is anything like what it was in Luther's day, but I can tell you there's much to absolutely and utterly dismay the heart. But as it began, it's more important for me to tell you the story that you may all already know about Brother Rodolfo Berdini's part in this. He was converted in 1949. A very young man, and I must say from the picture of himself and his wife, that he showed us a very dashing figure. He said, Rudolfo Valentino. And that might not be too far wrong. And his young wife, Layla. Having been converted as a true, simply child of God, he began in time to preach. But his first and I think most significant work is where he is now, in Aprilia, just south of Rome. Brother Francesco Fossi told me this story. Brother Fossi preaches in Latina, a little group of five. He is a student of Brother Berdini's, that is to say, as a young lad in the church of Aprilia, where his father was an elder. He was taught and trained by Brother Rodolfo. He's one of several products of this godly man's efforts. But he told me, he remembered the time when, the early 50s, Brother Berdini first came to his city, Aprilia. And that the preaching was done in his neighborhood and that Brother Berdini preached by the light of automobile lights. That's the only way he could see his Bible. And the people came out of their houses, and those, among those who came out were Brother Francesco's father and his mother. And of course, Vince, he became a Christian. 1956, in Aprilia, when the church numbered about 12, they hired a hall in the city and proposed to advertise, did advertise, to bring the people together. When they arrived there on the first night of this meeting, a group of young boys, rowdies of the Catholic Action Group, had come and trashed the meeting house, were intent on doing and continued to do it even while they were present in the building. Brother Berdini reported to us, as he told the story, that even while these young men were there destroying the property and abusing those that were present, a Catholic priest sat silently and without a word. When Sister Berdini appealed to him to influence these young men to stop. He said not one word. The result of that was a great crowd gathered outside when Brother Dean went outside to see the situation because rocks were being thrown at the building toward the windows. Fortunately, he said, there were curtains over the windows so that no one was injured by the rocks. There was a great crowd gathered out there, two policemen. The long and short of it is that they escaped from that situation that night by going in their little car, to which their tiny children, Gianni and Rosanna, had fled in terror. Crouch in the back part of a little vehicle that he said in Italian was called Mickey Mouse. He said they had got away that night with one policeman on one running board and another policeman on the other running board running through this crowd. I've forgotten how many, thought about 700 people gathered. He said the next night they went at 5:30. They had 150 in the meeting house waiting to hear what was going on. And a great crowd gathered outside, and now 70, I think, about 70 policemen around the place. And by this time, the news has gotten into the media over in an Eastern European country. And the word has gotten to the United States, and NBC has sent a crew out to interview and to see what's going on in Italy. As Brother Berdini told this story, he said, those were the wonderful years. Those were the wonderful years. And what he meant by that was that we were having entrance into the hearts of people. When a window was open through conflict and opposition. Now, as Larry says, Gianni does not remember that particular occasion quite so warmly as his father. But what it says to you is that these churches were born of conflict and opposition and societal hatred that was expressed in the most obvious and brutal and crude way. They were beaten sometimes. The most harsh kind of epithets were thrown at them. Can you imagine being like that in an Italian state that is monolithically Roman Catholic? And you're looked upon as the ones who have come to town to disturb the peace. You're disturbing this city. A people who was peaceful to you came. And now look at this. It reminds one a great deal of charges hurled against the first disciples who came to the country of Italy and to other countries around the Mediterranean. But in the meantime, while such noble effort as this was going on, when men like Brother Berdini were simply preaching the gospel, preaching the gospel, preaching the gospel, touching the hearts of men, the church in Apulia became, during this period, the largest church in Italy, about 100 members. But in the meantime, an orphan home was built at Frascati. A Bible school was established at Florence. And a camp for the resort of the brethren was established there as well. And the movement, as Brother Tondelli said, was from preaching the gospel to institutions. And he said that with tremendous lament in his voice. He said, we have this tremendous opportunity, and it's not here anymore. There was an opening that was present by the grace of God that we should have stepped into and fought desperately to preach the gospel to lost people. And what was done, institutions were developed that became the plague of the effort. 1974. Glenn Jones, who is presently preaching the gospel in Kiel, Germany, has been for several years. Small group there. They're building it out of granite, inch by inch, hard work by hard work. Went to Rome. He was a very young man. His father's an employee, a manager of an American oil company, going around the world, and Glenn just had an interest. He went to Rome actually to see the city. Had some contact with an Italian preacher preaching in Sicily. But somehow or another, he got him in touch with Brother Berdini in Rome. And they began to talk about things. And Brother Berdini began to tell him about the problems that they were having and about his disenchantment with so many things going on what the American brethren were doing that was betraying the needs of the Italian people spiritually. And Glenn began to sympathize with him and to tell him that's just exactly how he felt. And more than that, there were brethren in the United States who felt just exactly that way. Glenn never did see Rome. He spent two solid days talking with Brother Bernini about these things, and he urged him to write an article and to send it to Connie Adams to be published in this country. As Brother Bernini said, Glenn Jones never came back to Italy. But because this young man, just traveling about, took time to see about his father's business, rather than be intent on being a tourist, tremendous changes took place in Italy. Brother Bernini did write that article, From Italy with Sadness, which appeared early January, February, in Searching the Scriptures. But that didn't just go in easily, because it was only after a long exchange of correspondence between Connie and Brother Bernini that it was decided that the man was genuine, true, concerned. As a consequence of that article appearing, there was a visit to Brother Bernini by Brother Charles Moore, one of the Americans in Italy. One of the things that Brother Bernini had said was the American missionaries are bringing over these young people from the United States. They've got two or three secretaries apiece, and all this money being wasted on young people being given a vacation in Italy when the gospel needs to be preached by men who can preach it. When people are lost and needing the gospel. Well, he expressed himself plainly. Brother Moore came to him and said, "Well, Brother Bernini, if you'd wanted two or three secretaries, we'd have gotten you two or three secretaries. In fact, we can get you two or three secretaries now." He obviously understood nothing of the concern Brother Bernini had. At last, Brother Bernini appealed for Connie to come to Italy. And Connie at that time could not come, so James W. Adams and Foy Vincent went instead and had long hours and days of studies with brethren there. By November, the committee of the Florence Bible School came to Aprilia to discuss affairs with the brethren there. Several hours of debate over problems of the school in Florence and other things were had, and the president of the school, Brother Earl Edwards, who's now teaching, I believe, at Fleet Hardeman College or University, whatever the case may be, sought, Brother Bernini said, to ridicule the antis, or they're called Protestants in Italy. The Protestants. The antis. And charged Brother Bernini with bringing in bad people to Italy. The upshot of it was that the first Sunday of January 1976, the Aprilia Church split half in two. Several brethren objected to Brother Bernini as a preacher. Others defended him as a sound, fine, godly man. And after much disputation, that particular Sunday, the sound brethren simply left, about half the congregation, began meeting in the home of two elderly brethren in Aprilia. At that time, as we have noted earlier, the church in Aprilia was 100 members and the largest church in Italy. Half stayed at the building, half left, and that became the church that we know today as the Aprilia Assembly, where Brother Bernini works and labors as a gospel preacher, and where we have support with him. Now, brethren, I want to tell you today that with all my heart, I believe that's a worthwhile investment. And I want you to be aware of the investment you have made and are making in that. This is your work. And as I tell you about it, my intention is not to tell you what Larry and Linda and myself and Wilma did while we were there, because our being there was incidental to the task of understanding something and being able to communicate something to the church here. This was not for the church in the world. We did this simply because of a concern for those brethren and a concern that we should know better how to labor with them and to accomplish God's will in Italy as a group of Christians who are having fellowship with them. But the wound came to Italy after that. And work had to be started all over again. In that year, the Via Sanio congregation in the city, and I'll just give you a little bit of this thing, the Via Sanio congregation, the city of Rome, also took a sound stand. Brother Bernini went down to Poggio Moreno in the southern part of Italy, on the very side of Mount Vesuvius, and talked to those brethren, and they took a very sound position about these things. And in 1977, Brother Carrozza, who preaches at Viasanio, and Brother Bedini at Apulia, and Brother Tondelli, who preaches at Pomezia, began publishing a paper called Straight Paths in English. And their purpose was to discuss the issues in the church. Later on, Brother Adams and Brother H.E. Phillips came. Again, they had been there before, came the second time. And at this particular time, Brother Phillips offered Gianni Bredini, Brother Rodolfo's son, and Stefano Carrozza, Brother Carrozza's son, the opportunity to come to Florida and live with him and study with him and to go back and to preach. Gianni said, I didn't want to preach the gospel. I'd seen so much conflict. I'd seen so much difficulty. I didn't want to preach the gospel. But he said the need was so compelling. He had finished virtually a doctor's degree in architecture. 25, 26 years old. Not yet married to Pina, his wife-to-be. And what he was asking for in becoming a preacher in Italy was to become an invisible man. They don't know what you're talking about when you say, I'm a preacher of the gospel. Do you mean you're a priest? No. Well, what are you then? I'm a preacher. They don't know what that is. And may I suggest something else to you that was news to me? They have utterly no standing as workers in the Italian society. That is to say, they don't pay income tax because they're not recognized as workers. Now, there are plenty of other taxes to go around in Italy. I'll guarantee you. The sales tax is 19% on everything. But they are not acknowledged. They're invisible men. Try to go down and borrow money from the bank to get an automobile. What kind of reference would you get? Try to go down and rent an apartment. And they ask you where you work. Who's your employer? How about some references of that sort? And think about the challenge. As a consequence of not paying taxes, of course, they also have the privilege of having no medical coverage, which is available to other Italian citizens, and also no retirement benefit. You think about this young man, whose experience with his father had been at times traumatic. And what he had seen as a teenager was division and strife come to the churches. He said, I didn't want to preach the gospel, but I felt I had to preach the gospel. And so he came to the United States along with Stefano. And from 1978, 79, they were here. And in the meantime, Brother Bedini had gone up to Trieste where they had asked him to come, a little group about 25, because the women were starting to lead the prayers in the assembly, and be involved in teaching the men. And Brother Nino, Tomasi. Brother Nino Tomasi, an elder brother, was concerned about that. And he pled with Brother Bedini to come and study. And Brother Bedini came, talked about that, and was also invited by the brethren at Bonfalcone, which is very near, to come over there. And the American preacher who was in the neighborhood decided that wasn't a good idea, and he put a stop to that. And as a consequence of that, the brethren in Trieste began to wonder what's going on here, and they began to study this thing more. And Brother Bardini said, I've got a son who's in the United States, and he's coming home. Would you be willing for him to come here and preach? And they said, yes, they certainly would. And that's when Gianni went to Trieste. Gianni Bardini is the other man we're supporting. Went in 1980, about 20 members. In the first year, they had to withdraw from 7. That left 12, 13. In the last 9 years, they baptized 18 people. Among them, Eddie and Patrizia Giorgi. He's born in Yugoslavia. Baptized 2 years ago. Fine young couple. Vital, earnest. She doesn't quit talking. Fastest Italian ever been spoken. And there's Marta Galante. Baptized about 2 years ago, her husband often beats her to keep her from coming to assemblies. 25 years old, one child. And their sister Amelia, 83 years old, baptized last March. as a brother in Miami, Florida. The collections of the church in Trieste, about $280 a week. From that, they helped Gianni with $100 a month. He says he hopes that they can soon increase it to $200. They don't own that meeting place. The church in Ponca City, Oklahoma owns that meeting place. They've never heard from it, never had any contact with it. They maintain it. It cost them $6,000 last year to repair the roof. They had to pay $200 a month for a condominium fee as a part of the building. They have also helped in works in other places. And I want to make a point here. I don't have much time left this morning as we talk about Trieste, a city of 300,000 people crowded between the sea and Yugoslavia, a narrow sliver of land, very end of Italy. And I was asking the question, and I'm a person who looks at this very, shall I say, carefully. I am concerned that we do not go abroad with a sack full of money, saying, we've got the money, let's get to work. I don't believe the Apostle Paul did that. And I have seen for the last several years, brethren from this country go with a sack full of money and try to build things out of money. And I can tell you, it does not work that way. Money has its purpose and its usefulness. Great usefulness. But you can't buy the kingdom of God. You can't build buildings with money and have the church. And you certainly can't go beyond the word of God and build a group of institutions God never had anything to do with and try to build the kingdom of God with carnal weapons. And so I went to Italy looking with some considerable concern on the question of whether or not these churches have been made to realize their responsibility so they could grow. You can't grow if you don't assume responsibility. Can't do that. You're maintained as a child. So I asked myself the question, and I asked them the question. Are these churches learning their responsibility to you? Just so happens the lira has just dropped like, not the lira, but the dollar dropped like a rock recently, but of course, it's back to where it was a year ago, and it was much better 6 months ago. And it just keeps going up and down, which is a considerable problem for Italian preachers receiving their support from the United States. The best I know to say about that is that churches that are supporting such men ought to take into account what happens over a year's time and look and see if they've lost some considerable amount of buying power as a consequence of that fluctuation in the dollar, which is driven lower as a matter of economic policy in the United States. But at any rate, here's the problem. Here's their challenge. There are 54 million people in Italy. In a country the size of Arizona, there are 8 preachers. I mean, that's between 6 and 7 million apiece. And I dare say there are hardly more than 200 Christians. We will see the need of the preachers. But, brethren, I don't think we'll ever be on the spot enough and sensitive enough to the need to know when somebody needs to go over and rent a meeting hall in a certain place and start calling people together. I don't think we'll see the need to go down and buy some radio time or some television time or to print some literature. Any literature they have got to develop or translate it. This is Italian. We don't have it in Italian over here. And in many cases, what we have would not be adaptable so easily to the Italian mind. And so they're having to produce it. They're printing content. I saw some of the finest printing work that they have done. And they have done it, in many cases, by buying the equipment themselves. And they have bought radio time themselves. And the greatest thing, it seemed to me, that I learned, and I've learned all this not by them pulling it on me, but by asking questions, that individual Christians over there are continually making contributions to these preachers to help them, to rent a hall, to get on the radio, to get some equipment to do printing with, to print that material. One sister in Trieste that Johnny said has very little, has 3 times given about $700 to them. And Betsy had to save by a dint of strong, careful saving. And she gave it. What that said to me is, somebody's been teaching these people something about what it means to be a Christian.
And if you've got people in the churches who understand that, then the churches will take care of themselves. When individual disciples realize that there's something critical going on here, and we've got to do something about it. But my point is this. I don't foresee a time in the immediate future when these men are going to cease to need the continuing support of American Brethren. And I come back feeling that that's as it should be. Because these churches are doing what they can at this point to help support the preachers. The church in Aprilia helps some with Brother Berdini. The church in Udine, which was established by Brother Stefano Carrozza, is helping now $350 a month with the support of Valerio Marchi, who is, that's another story. I don't have time to tell all these stories this morning. I just have to take more time later. And I'll stop at this point. Three things impressed me about our brethren in Italy. Number one, their challenge. It is immense. And they are few. The churches are small, and some of them are very small. Number two, the character of these men. There is nothing economically or materially attractive about preaching the gospel in Italy. Many of these men gave up professions that would have had considerable impact on their financial condition. Number three, I was impressed with their aggressiveness. They are out teaching and preaching continually. There is no slack in them, nor in the brethren. I just can't tell you how much we saw of that. A continual, aggressive effort to reach lost people. Continual. Last Friday night, we were in a meeting in Albano, outside Rome. That doesn't seem possible, but on that very day before yesterday, we were out handing out invitations on the streets of Albano. And that night, a meeting in the local civic hall, gathering the people together. And Brother Berdini preaching on the family and the scripture. Had four people there that were not Christians, some of them they'd already been studying with. But it was a wonderful evening. Didn't understand much, but I felt something great was going on. They are aggressive. They are embattled. They are tiny. They are rejected. But I'll tell you something. They are not weak. And one final thing, and then the lesson is yours this morning. I was impressed with their families. Brother Berdini's two daughters and a son. The son is preaching. The two daughters are married to gospel preachers. One to Stefano Carrozza and the other to Roberto Tondelli. Brother Carrozza, two sons, both preaching the gospel. And I saw in the churches, fathers and mothers and the sons gathered together to worship, particularly in Aprilia and other places. It's evident to me that the churches are not just old people, but young people. Vital people. I want to say to some of the young men here that there's some young ladies over there that's godly girls, unmarried. I don't know if you want to take the chance on a cross-cultural marriage, but Brother Roberto Tondelli has got one young lady down there in Pomezia. He said, I don't like the guy she's going with now. I said, if anybody over there you can put her in touch with, do the job. You'd love them too. I want you to love them. But I want you to know that we're not experts after 2 weeks. But I don't believe we missed the major point. It was just too obvious. So when you think about sending the help to Brother Rodolfo, when you think of sending that help to Gianni, I want you to think about this. I'll tell you more later. And Brother Larry will be telling you more later. But this is good work. And we need to do as much as we can, which means I got to do as much as I can do, personally, and through the liberality of this church and my part in it. If you're not a Christian, you need to be. You need to be because it's the only way to live in a world that God rules. And I'm speaking of being a true disciple. I'm talking about somebody who gives his life away to God. And submits himself to this will, not to some human system. Not some human idea, however impressive and imposing it may be in this world. We may be, as disciples of the Lord, a very small and inconsequential group. And let that be as it is. We are God's people, not because we have been so fine, not because we were the gems of society, but because when He called, we answered Him. And we have given our lives to Him. And you can do the same. Simply by believing in His Son, confessing your faith in Him, and being baptized into His death. Raised to walk in newness of life. If you're not a new man in Christ this morning, I'm pleading with you to come as we're standing and singing, and give your life to the Lord in obedience to His will and serve Him all your day. All your life.